Close your eyes if that's comfortable for you. And just try to come into your body. Just be, and the way to do that is to just be in the present moment. Let go of everything else. And just gradually, that will become comfortable to do. Let go of your thoughts. No need to try to get rid of your thoughts because it's almost impossible to do that. But just let your thoughts come and go without feeding them with your attention. And everything else coming to you through your sense doors, you can let everything come and go. Just be aware of it, but no need to get caught up in it or feed it with your attention. You'll hear sounds. You may want to react positively or negatively, but see if you can just allow them to be what they are. And if your body is not comfortable, change your position. If your body is uncomfortable, you won't be able to put your attention on your breath and really practice meditation. Now, the focus of your attention is your breath. Sometimes it's good to start with a few deep breaths in and out, breathing in and out through your nostrils. Just feel your breath. Try to let your normal breathing get down to the bottom of your diaphragm. You want to feel your belly. As you inhale, feel your belly come out a bit. And as you exhale, feel the contraction of your belly. That can be very subtle. But that can be the spot that you're focused on, or you can focus right around your nostrils. Even a more subtle sensation. And then relax into this breath. Relax into your body. Nothing to do, nowhere to go. Let your hands relax in your lap. Palms can be up or down. One palm can be inside of the other. Or each palm can be just resting on your upper leg. Just don't let your fingers be clenched and tight. Just let them be relaxed. Very quickly, just go through your entire body from your head down to your toes, and then from your toes back up. We often just stay in our heads. We never get below our neck. And if you can scan your body, you can see and be more in your body. So just move down through flesh, of the skin, flesh, and bones. Just repeat those words as you move down, and what I want you to look for are places where you feel tightness or tension or pain, or you may just have that tension from being out of balance. And when you come to one of those spots, just imagine that you're breathing right directly into that spot. And as you exhale, just release, and you can imagine just letting go of that tension. And if you come to a place that feels out of balance, it's perfectly okay to move your body to correct that imbalance. Go all the way down. When you're in your hips, be sure to look and see that you're sitting in a way that supports you but also keeps you in balance. Just go all the way down to your feet. All the time recognizing you are in your body. And then come up from your feet back up. We always begin this practice with loving kindness. And it's a very important part of the practice. It can help you purify your mind. It helps a great deal with anger and hatred. So it's very important. But the first person we began to send friendliness to and kindness to is ourselves. It's not because we're being selfish, it's because we know that to really care about others, we have to care about ourselves. We have to find that love for ourselves, that friendliness, the caring and compassion. We have to have it for ourselves before we can truly send it out to others. May I be well, both mentally and physically. May I be contented and have times of happiness and joy. May I feel safe in this chaotic world. And may I be filled with peace. May I be well. May I be content. May I be peace. Now think of someone you love unconditionally. Could be a teacher, could be a pet. Could be a parent, just someone that you have complete faith in. May this person be well and happy and peaceful. May no harm come to them. May they be free from fear. And you can see that this person in your mind's eye, or this pet, feel how easy it is to send loving kindness to this person. Now open up more, a wider range, and think of your friends, your family members. May all my family members and my friends and acquaintances be well, both mentally and physically. May they be contented with times of great happiness and great joy. May they be free from fear, worry, and anxiety. May they feel safe in this chaotic world. And may they be at peace. Even if you're at odds with someone in this group or you're having a difficult time with them, just allow yourself to open your heart to them. Sending them these thoughts, these are gifts, the way we present. When we say, may they be, this is like presenting these beings with a gift, And it's a gift that you're extending to them. Not a specific gift from you, but a gift that you recognize that you can hopefully see them partake of. Now just extend this same quality, all of these qualities of loving kindness and peace to all beings, human and non-human, beings we can see and beings invisible to us, beings being born, beings dying, and just imagine that extending out infinitely, out into the universe. May all beings everywhere be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. Free from fear and worry and anxiety, free from hunger and thirst, and the ravages of climate change. May all beings be able to care for themselves or be lovingly cared for by others. And may all beings everywhere throughout this world, throughout the universe, know peace. And when you're ready, let your attention come back to your breath. And observe each breath, each inhale, and each exhale. Let your mind be open, but just let everything flow through. If you see yourself getting caught up in a thought or caught up in a story, just be aware of it and let it drop, let it go. Come back to your breath. We can always start over. Now bring your hands, your palms together to your heart. And through the merit of the effort we've all put out today, coming here, being here together, practicing together, may everything we do and think and say be done not only for our own benefit, but may everything we do and say and think be done for the benefit of all other beings everywhere. Thank you. If you hear a really loud noise in the middle of don't really need it. I think we start on page 4. I'm old school, so I'll be chanting it the way we did before Bhante Dhamma Vihara was here. So go back a few months. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami. Tutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami. Tutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Anicca vata sankhara upadevaya dhammino. Upajitva nirujanti tesam upa samosuko. Sabe satta avera hontu. Sabe satta avya paja hontu. Sabe satta aniga hontu. Sabe satta sukhiyatanam hariharantu. Mano pupangema dhamma. Mano seta mano maya. Manasa che padu. Tena pasati wa karoti wa tato nam dukkha manveti. Ch
Chakang wewahato padang mano pupange madama mano seta mano maya manasate pasanena pasati wa karo Tato nang sukha man veti chaya ve ana paini.
Mind is a forerunner of all states. Mind is chief. Mind made are they. If with a corrupted mind one should either speak or act, suffering follows caused by that, as does the wheel follow the ox's hoof. Mind is a forerunner of all states. Mind is chief. Mind made are they. If with a clear and confident mind one should either speak or act, happiness follows caused by that, as one shadow that never leaves. We believe in generous others. We believe the skillful, noble path is marked by generosity. We believe generosity has many levels. Think generously, speak generously, act generously. We believe generosity is the heart of our spiritual practice, and thus practice allows us to become more open, accepting, and forgiving. We believe extending generosity to ourselves and others is a direct way of healing division, bringing joy, and nurturing the spiritual community for years to come. May I become, at all times, now and forever, a protector for those without protection, a guide for those who have lost their way, a ship for those with an ocean to cross, a sanctuary for those in danger, a lamp for those without light, a place of refuge for those who lack shelter, and a servant to all in need. By means of this meritorious deed, may I never join with the unwise, only the wise, until the time I attain Nibbana.
So, there you are. I'm introducing you, Erin Dank. If you don't know Erin, she's on the board. She's an art therapist, recently retired, and giving even more time to the temple. And she's doing the Dhamma talk today. Between the two of us, we're like a patriotic red, white, and blue. Yeah. It's on.
It's the Weemal and Erin show today. So. Okay, can you hear me? Ooh.
Yes, I'm always very humbled and honored to be asked to do a Dhamma talk here. So I'm very happy to be here. I hope that this helps you in some way, my talk. So this is about Buddhism and creativity. In my years as an art therapist, an artist working in institutions or the community, the words that I spoke that got the most emotional reaction were, quote, art, artist, and being creative. Most adults express either interest, motivation, or anxiety and fear, or dismissal of art and creativity, and one's ability to be creative and artistic. The message they learned about creativity is either you have it or you don't. My life's work has evolved into providing a safe space for people to no longer fear these negative messages in their mind and to find their own creative voice and a path to authenticity and self-awareness. In my experience, being silent through meditation allows for the opening and clearing of negative thoughts that block and prevent natural creativity in human beings. To understand creativity, I will provide definitions that describe creative living, thinking, and behaving in our daily lives. My intention is to open your mind to your inherent creativity with ideas on how Buddhist practice can guide you, and I invite you to pursue a creative life. Personally, I grew up in a very creative home with both parents being visual artists and writers. My father worked in advertising and my mother was a freelance writer. My parents were always engaged in making something or doing something that was expressive. Mom would make paper flowers for the living room just because she wanted them. She would weave a scarf for the Chicago winter, making beaded Christmas ornaments or making me paper dolls. Dad refinished furniture, gold leaf tables, and played Burt Bacharach records to sing along with as we did our Saturday cleaning and took me to see foreign films at the cinema theater. They taught me to see objects in new ways and find all the possibilities to change the objects into something aesthetically pleasing and functional. They also encouraged imagination by visualizing these possibilities, whether it had to do with our home, cooking, me playing in the sand at Oak Street Beach, or making a place for my imaginary friend at the dinner table. I didn't know it, but we were living a creative life. Creativity is, in fact, within us all, and it is a necessary element in our existence as balanced and healthy human beings. Once people make space for creative energy to emerge and take form, they find freedom through seeing potentials and options, understanding of one's meaning and purpose. There are many examples of art making and the creative process being integrated into one's daily life, community, and internal world. Indigenous peoples globally create through music, storytelling, movement, clothing, textiles, or pottery. In the world of sacred and spiritual art, creativity takes on the role of expressing the unexplainable while honoring and giving life to spiritual beings and states of being. Icon painting serves as objects of devotion and represents the saints in their mystical forms. Tonka paintings are seen as the visual representations of a spiritual reality. Navajo sand paintings function to connect with the healing ceremonies and use symbolic representations of the Navajo's mythologies. All three of these focus on the creative process of the person is giving life and making meaning to the object. The process itself becomes an act of spiritual practice and purpose. In our country, we have examples of art and craft integrated into daily life. Quilting circles, knitting prayer shawls in churches, and Shaker furniture with its expression of simplicity, utility, and honesty. Traditions related to gardening and food are also part of creative behaviors within families. So what is creativity? In America, it has been broken down and defined in psychological, aesthetic, neurological, educational, and spiritual terms. In the past, those that created were deemed divine and unique human beings, for example, Mozart. Once creativity started being studied as an activity of the brain, we understood it as something we actually possess and can potentially access. Neuroscientists observe that creativity is found to be the ability to understand and express novel, orderly relationships and the ability to develop alternative solutions to problems. Studies of the brain indicate creativity is no longer allocated to the right hemisphere of the brain, but is dispersed among neurological networks all over the brain. Ellen Dissianacki, an anthropologist, looked at the behavior of art in her book, What is Art For? She states, there is an inherent pleasure in making. There is something important, even urgent, to be said about the sheer enjoyment of making something exist that didn't exist before, of using one's own agency, dexterity, feelings, and judgment to mold, form, touch, hold, and craft physical materials, apart from anticipating the fact of its eventual beauty, uniqueness, or usefulness. Creativity's largest area of study has been in the mental health environment. Hans Prinzhorn's Artistry of the Mentally Ill from 1922 is a collection of art produced by mentally ill patients in a Heidelberg asylum. In this pioneering work, Prinzhorn compiled a collection of art from 3,000 patients. He introduced the inner world of people abandoned and abused by society as creative and purposeful human beings. Through their art, he identified six basic drives that give rise to image making. Express an expressive urge, the urge to play, an ornamental urge, an ordering tendency, and a tendency to imitate, and the need for symbols. It was found that making art provided emotional release and communication when words were not effective. In 1969, the American Art Therapy Association organized out of the psychiatric model and brought art to people who otherwise would have had no opportunity to express their own creativity, nor express their own thoughts and feelings. Creative process was also studied and organized into stages by Graham Wallace and Eric Maisel. In Wallace's 1920 book, The Art of Thought, he describes four stages of the creative process based on observations of scientists and artists. Preparation, incubation, illumination, and verification are those stages. Eric Maisel describes stages of the creative process based on his observation of various artists: wishing, choosing, starting, working, completing, and showing. He uses Buddhist language when he identifies corresponding anxieties as hungry mind, confused mind, weakened mind, chaotic mind, critical mind, and shy or attached mind. He suggests that if you are to create, you must invite anxiety and learn to quiet the mind. Before all of the previous listed scientists, the Buddha taught and demonstrated that all human beings possess an inherent potential for creativity, and it is in fact part of our enlightened mind. Creativity is viewed as the personal expression to use to teach others the path towards enlightenment. Buddha was creative, and he used creativity to teach how to attain the quiet mind. Buddha's practice, in fact, encourages these stages in its process of teaching and sutta prose. According to Bhikkhu Bodhi, a distinctive feature of Buddha's teaching is the respect for direct experience. Thus, we see the abundant use of similes and metaphors to describe the direct experience of suffering, conflict, understanding, and enlightenment, such as grass and sticks, balls of clay, the mountain, a dog on a leash, and so on. Creative visualization is used in the image of the Dhamma wheel, the Four Noble Truths, and the Eightfold Path. How do Buddhists describe nurturing creativity? In Geshe Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche's article, How to Unleash Your Creativity, he introduces the great perfection teachings of Vajrayana Buddhism, in which true creativity has to do with more than just ability or skill, or even actions or behaviors. While those play an important role, creativity ultimately has to do with our state of being. Here we have the integration of the psychological with the spiritual, and I believe the core of creativity. He states that creativity can be seen as a state of natural flow. The state of flow, which has its roots in openness, occurs only in the absence of hope and fear. It is at once naturally joyful, peaceful, compassionate, expansive, and powerful. When you know how to tap fully into this open creative flow, its beneficial qualities can extend to any area of your life. Similar to Eric Maisel, he sees the barriers or blocks to creative flow as based in self-image and identifying with a negative energy. Thus, American and Buddhist thoughts on creativity appear to connect in terms of the creative process. As I described earlier in the stages of creativity, the need to incubate or be silent in reflective thought or meditation calms the mind and body to allow for ideas to emerge. This silence or emptying of the cluttered mind can expand our thoughts into an ability to cope with stress, anxiety, and fears in our life. We can get locked into one way of thinking and seeing the world around us and seeing ourselves. We can become perfectionists and create unreal expectations. We can become addicts, seeing only one solution. To keep from getting caught up in these hindrances, consider not focusing so much on the goal, but how to get there. The following three steps to creativity offered by Rinpoche can be applied to any change or transformation that you are facing. So number one is to clear your inner obstacles. The first step toward unleashing the open flow of creativity is to attain a state of openness that requires clearing away your negative self-image through meditation. He provides the following guide for meditation. Notice your internal dialogue. Are you always telling yourself things like, this can't work, no one will like it, I'm not good enough, I don't have the energy, or it's not worth the trouble? Identify your primary obstacle. Simply being aware that it is within you can help begin the process of unblocking. Sit comfortably, close your eyes, and take a moment to feel the stillness of your body. Listen and hear the silence within and around you, and abide in the spaciousness of your mind. Now, from that place of stillness, silence, and spaciousness, bring your main obstacle back into awareness. Observe it nakedly, without concepts, judging, or evaluating. And then finally, he says, to take in a deep breath of pure awareness, feeling, and seeing the inner obstacle you have selected. As you exhale, breathe out the blockage and experience a dissolving into space. Be aware of that space and effortlessly rest there for a few minutes. Number two, he talks about open to your potential. The second step toward unleashing a free flow of creativity is to cultivate and connect fully with that awareness and sense of unlimited potential. Once you do so, you can come to realize that not only are you more than you had always thought you were, but your entire world is full of positive alternatives. And number three, nurture a sense of warmth or joy. Once you have realized a sense of openness, confidence, and unlimited potential, then qualities of joy, what he calls warmth, can naturally arise. It is only from this warmth that creativity finally will freely manifest. The third condition for connecting with your creative nature, therefore, is to notice and nurture a feeling of warmth. Spontaneous action is joyful action, and that is true creativity. Whether it is a great artist immersed in the act of painting, a mother embracing her child, or a bodhisattva expressing compassion to sentient beings, full immersion in the creative flow brings a sense of freedom, playfulness, and joy. So during these times of global chaos and pain, as well as our own personal life events, I strongly believe that using our innate creative energy can help humans cope, manage, confront, or resolve all the suffering that comes at us and within us. Meditation and mindfulness plant the seeds for the space and the emptiness that allow us to be steady and clear-sighted in building a creative life. Thank you. So if anyone has any comments or questions, complaints, body sensations, I'm open. Yeah. Yes.
I just read an article, serendipity, I just read an article this morning on Buddhism and hopelessness. And that to put hope out there is to put a goal without considering, you know, where you might be in the meantime, that you might not even go there. Mm. So that to give up hope is to give up fear at the same time, and I'm afraid that, and that's why I need hope.
Yes.
So if you give up hope,
yes.
And you've got the courage, then you have to find the courage.
Yes. And you don't have that attachment.
Exactly.
With the hope, yeah. This thing up there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
I just like the idea of a timeless, broad saga of, you know, being touched by someone else's creativity.
Yeah, yes.
And, I mean, that can be over centuries, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We are creators. We are born creators. So I think that's, you know, the bigger picture, right? Yeah. Yeah.
So I'll do a little commercial for your workshop. And I still, she let, at that
Yes. Yes. I did a talk with, they were junior high teachers, and they, I brought up the issue of most of the adults I've worked with, or like come to workshops, there is this, I'm not artistic. Don't call me artistic, I'm not. Yet I'm creative. So there's like this two different worlds. And I mean, they were interested in that in terms of, well, how are we teaching art and how do we nurture art or that idea of creativity in our educational system? Sometimes if you are coloring outside of the box or you're doing something a little different, your teacher may not like that or it may not be the assignment. Or I remember in high school, my drawing teacher erased what I had drawn and redrew it. So sometimes, you know, it's also, I think, something we need to look at how we educate children and nurture creativity in a home, you know. So, and it is play. So I guess that's why for a long time when I've done the art meditation here at the temple and in other environments, I invite adults to play, to activate that spontaneous part, your right brain, as well as activating the whole body and the whole brain. And I have found that that helps loosen things up, you know. But I do feel, I know for me, once I started being silent and meditating, actually before I go to my studio or anywhere, even if I'm sitting in my garden, I was doing that the other day, and I'm like, I don't know what to do. So I just kind of sat there and took a breath and just, you know, it clears your head. We are so bombarded with shit, no offense, that's not really a poly word, but we're so in our daily lives. And it most of the time doesn't even belong to us, these thoughts, right? So it's a process of clearing that out. Okay, well, I'm not an artist, but what can I make, you know? How can I see things differently than I didn't see before? And I know just, I've just seen it, that thinking, that process really helps people survive, to be honest. It really does. But thanks for bringing up. We are, by the way, since I'm up here and I have the microphone to myself. So Wimal and I, we've been doing art meditation workshop for several years, including during the pandemic. And we did it via Zoom. I'm an artist purist. There's no way you can do art, you know, like that. And we did, and it was very, very, it was really good. So next, this coming Tuesday, I'm going to start doing another series. It'll be 10 weeks. Wimal will be with me. My Sangha sister, and this time it's going to be more, pretty much almost like pretty much what I was talking about here, where I'm going to help the first 3 weeks people learn kind of how just to get into your creative skin, and working on clearing the mind, and then some specific, more structured activities as far as developing that. And then the rest of it will actually be Buddhist teaching, and so we're going to work on the 10 perfections. And Wimala will be guiding us with that, and then we will be doing different kinds of expressive art, so it won't just be 2D. We're going to hopefully have writing and music and things like that. So that's what's going on. Any other comments? Or yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because it is.
Yeah.
And I think, again, it's been such, it's been so disconnected in our American culture, especially, that it's not. It's mechanical, you know, it's product oriented. So, and that can be anything. Another thing, I mean, yeah, I think if it's not spiritual, then it kind of loses its purpose and its meaning. You know, what's the point? What's the point? I also want to share, I mean, I think, again, for all of you, whatever you're doing in your lives, you're probably doing creativity. You're probably doing creative acts. I was fortunate enough to actually do a radio show for Harvard Community Radio a couple of years ago, and it was called The Creative Life, and I interviewed all kinds of people, businessmen, lawyers, teachers, not just artists, and massage therapist, all kinds of people. And when I listened to them talk, I was listening to their process, And it was very much divergent thinking, creative thinking. And I thought that was fascinating. And so then I had them give me a definition of what they thought creativity was. And it was interesting for them because they had an aha moment of, wow, I am being creative, or I am doing creative things with my work. You never thought a lawyer would be creative, right? But it was just fascinating to do that. So I guess if anything, it is not something foreign, it is something that is within us. And it's something that if you feel it is blocked, then there's a way to open that up. So, anything else?